Good morning, and welcome to WDRT's show Conversations. My name is Steve Brandle, and I'm one of the rotating hosts that come to you every Thursday morning. So welcome. Today, we're going to be doing a show on the history of small towns in the area. And I love talking about history, and I especially love talking about history when we have knowledgeable guests like we do today. Today, we're going to be talking about the city of Lafarge and one of its longtime resident, Brad Steinmetz, is joining us today, and he's a lifelong resident of Lafarge, local historian, retired school district teacher from Lafarge, and author of several books. So, Brad, welcome.
Oh, good to be here, Steve.
And I know Brad has been on the show before or on the air here at WDRT before reading one of his books. Brad, you have three books. Tell us about those three.
I do. I have one book which is called That Dam History, which is about the Lafarge Dam Project. And then I have two volumes of the history of Lafarge. Volume one I started and got out in 2009. It was called Lafarge, the Story of a Kickapoo River Town, and it basically covers from the very beginnings of the history up to the early 1960s. And then volume two, which I got out in 2018, covers from the 60s up until 2017.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good. And those you wrote over the last years, or was
yes,
it since you retired?
Yes, I did. I started to write a local history column for the local newspaper in Lafarge, The Episcope, back in 2007. And that really grew out of working with a group that celebrated the centennial of Lafarge back in 1999. And one of the things we found out when we were going through that information for the centennial is nobody had written a history of the village, the community. And so I was basically kind of nudged that way by my fellow committee members. And at the time, I was still teaching. And once I got that over and started into the writing the column, then that kind of led into writing the different books on Lafarge's history.
Okay, great. And you're a lifelong resident of Lafarge.
I am. I grew up in Lafarge and graduated from the high school in 1965. My lovely wife, Carolyn, and I moved down to Madison area, and I taught in Cambridge a couple years and then came back to Lafarge in 1973 and taught over 30 years at the high school there. Also have spent a number of years working at the reserve as a kind of the local historian for the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and talking to school groups and adult groups about the dam project and that history.
Well, great. And, you know, I can't think of, I certainly don't know of anybody else, and I've lived in the area for over 30 years, that has the knowledge base that you do. And obviously, being a history teacher and studying history in school and things like that, I'm sure you've kind of covered the gamut, and having the stories told around the kitchen table, I'm sure, at meals growing up. So your family was part of the Lafarge scene. They owned a grocery store, didn't they?
They did for a few years when I was really young. And then after that, my father Earl and Laverne Camel started CNS Motors.
Oh, yeah.
And so then they ran the Chevy Buick dealership in Lafarge. So I was kind of growing up on Main Street there for a number of years, and have a lot of good memories from that time. When I started my column for the Episcope, I reached out to people and I said, hey, if you have a story, share it with me or whatever. Sure. And people send me stories, they send me photos. And so I have been involved in that ever since. And another thing that's come up was in 2020, during the COVID shutdown, I started a Facebook posting on local history, and every day I post photos and bits and pieces of Lafarge's history, just as a way to reach out and connect with people during that difficult time. And it proved popular, and so we're still going.
Yeah, and it is, and it's a wonderful, your Facebook page is one that's full of pictures and full of history, and you know, I think it brings out the local community's thoughts and memories and that sort of thing of what took place. So it's just fun to get everyone's story that way.
Yes, that's been fun, and I hear from a lot of my former students and friends from, you know, way back, and they keep watching, and if I miss a day, I hear about it.
Exactly. Well, let's take it back and start from the very beginning. So Lafarge, located on the Kickapoo River, you said it. The founding people came when, and who were the indigenous tribes that were in the area before the settlement of the Europeans?
Well, there were a number, of course, and you can actually trace back people living in the Kickapoo Valley 5 to 10,000 years ago, and there's three different ages of people that lived way back, and then if you go back about 1,500 years, then you can start to get into specific groups that were here and look at that. And there were different tribes of Native Americans who lived in the northern Kickapoo Valley. And of course, you know, the Kickapoo name always comes up because of the name of the valley. And that was just one group that was here. And interesting thing about you know, the research on the dam project was when the federal government decided they were going to do that, they had to reach out to the Wisconsin Historical Society and let them know about it, because some of these areas were going to be covered up with water. And so the Historical Society came out and they started looking at petroglyphs and mounds and caves and all of that type of thing. And they discovered that 5,000 years ago, there were people in the northern Kickapoo Valley who were hunting animals and all of this type of thing, which they didn't know before. It was kind of groundbreaking stuff. And so that's an interesting aspect of it. And it happened when Bernice Schroeder, who was one of the landowners on the dam project land, actually took the historians over to a petroglyph called Hansen's Rock Petroglyph and showed it to them, and the historians didn't know what they had and took it to a national conference, and then it was found out that these were people who had migrated in from the west and some 5,000 years ago.
Wow.
So.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you said multiple tribes over the years came and went for whatever reason, food supply, warring, whatever took place. So there were multiple tribes.
Yes, and the last one were the Ho-Chunk.
Okay.
Ho-Chungra, as they call themselves, the people of the Big Voice. And they were here at the time of the Black Hawk War, which, of course, was an event that caused almost all of the tribes of Wisconsin to be moved away by the federal government. And by the late 1830s, the Ho-Chunk had been moved, or the Winnebago, as they were called at that time, had been moved out to Iowa. But interestingly, they came back. They loved the Kickapoo Valley, and they would come back in the summer, and they would fish and hunt and collect plants for their medicines and different things like that. And I have an interesting family story. My grandmother, Isa Camel, lived up on Fairview Ridge between Viroqua and Lafarge. And she was a young girl, just young girl in the 1890s. And every spring when the Ho-Chunk would come back, they would stop at my grandmother's great-grandmother's house because she was a really good baker, and they wanted some bread or pies or whatever she was baking, and then they would trade maple syrup and maple syrup candy that they had made before, the Ho-Chunk had made before. And so that was always an interesting little tidbit of history that my grandma had told me.
Right. And while that was as current as the 1890s, you said that was happening. So they were on a reservation in Iowa?
Yes. Well, they were out on the Turkey Creek Reservation at that time. And they didn't particularly like it, but they had pretty much been bribed to go out there. The federal government would give them money if they stayed out there, and the money came during the winter, so they were always over there for when the money came in. Okay. And so then they would come back, and they would camp at different spots. They had a camp up on Warner Creek, which is basically still there on the reserve and kind of a neat place. And different ones around.
Sure. And then moving on to the first European settlements and the first Europeans that came to the area, who were they, where did they come from, and why did they come here?
Most of the early settlers of the Northern Kickapoo Valley came from the East, New York State and Ohio and Indiana. And they came because land was cheap and it was plentiful. And so when they were coming out here, they decided that, this was something they wanted to do. The very first ones to settle in Lafarge was the Thomas DeJane family. He and his wife Polly and son Anson were here in 1855, bought some land, and built a mill, built a house on the Kickapoo River, and then built a sawmill because there was lots and lots of wood available for lumbering. And that didn't go particularly well for them. And so later they built a grist mill, grinding up wheat and barley and all of that kind of stuff for area farmers. And then the area that we know of as Lafarge now was basically part of that property. Soon after that, a man by the name of Dempster Seeley came to the area, and he was a lumberman. He was a mill operator. He had actually two successful mill operations down on the Rock River in the Jefferson Ford Atkinson area. But he was always kind of looking out, and he'd sell one mill and start up another one. And they sold that mill that he had on the Rock River, and he came to the Kickapoo Valley, and he bought property in what became known as Seeleyburg, because he built a mill there, a lumber mill, and it soon became the largest mill in the Kickapoo Valley. And it was fueled by the fact that the great pine forests of northern Wisconsin came down the Kickapoo Valley because of the unique mini climate that they have in the valley. And, usually you think that the northern pine forests stop up at Black River Falls or Toma, somewhere like that. But they came down the Kickapoo Valley, and the pines were prolific. And so there was lumber mills in Ontario and Odin, which is north of Rockton, and one at Rockton and Lafarge and all the way down the river. But, I mean, those northern mills were into that pine plantation. And so Seeley got that going and did really well with it and made, cut up lumber to build every house and barn in the area. And then eventually they started putting it into rafts and floating it down the Kickapoo and selling it to all the Midwestern markets.
Okay, and Seeleyburg is not there anymore, right?
Well, it is in name only, but it's... It was prolific during the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s. It was a village, and it had houses and stores and of course the mill and the dam for that mill operation. But in the 1890s, a series of floods hit the village, and it was located right on the Kickapoo River and a very flood-prone area. And it kind of got washed out. And it's interesting, there's a book that was written by William Stark called Ghost Towns of Wisconsin. And Seeliberg is one of those ghost towns that's mentioned in there. And what happened after the Great Flood of 1899 was that that was pretty much the end of Seeliberg. And as those floods were hitting, the businesses and the people were moving south to the Corners, or the James Corners, as it was known, and eventually it became Lafarge. And so Seeliberg kind of went away.
Right, but basically Seeliberg was adjoining where Lafarge is now, just north?
Just north of Lafarge,
Of Lafarge, yep. A little bit.
Yep.
So we know that Seeliberg got its name from Mr. Seeliberg.
Yep, Mr. Seeley.
Mr. Seeley,
yeah.
Okay. What about Lafarge? How did Lafarge get its name?
Well, that's interesting, too, because there was a number south of what's currently Lafarge. There was a number of people who moved in, and the biggest farm was the Lawton Farm, which was right on the Kickapoo River. And this area became known as the Lawton District, and there were lots of farmers in the area, and they wanted to get a post office. And so they applied to the Postal Service to see if they could get a post office. And the Postal Department gave them a list of names that they could use for this new post office that they were going to have. It was going to be located on the Green Farm, which is now the Green Apple Inn, actually, south of Lafarge. And there was this tradition that these families would get together after church on Sundays, and they would generally have a meal together. And one of the things that they would do is they loved to sing hymns, and they would always have the kids pick from a list of names of hymns, and then they would sing those hymns. So they had this list of ideas for the post office, and they had one of the girls, a little girl, look at the list and cover her eyes, and she pointed, and it landed on Lafarge. So that's how they got the name. So that post office was located down below there, a mile or two below Lafarge, what we now know of Lafarge. And in the 1890s, when the Corners, or the Jane's Corners as it was known, was really starting to grow, they wanted a post office. But the Postal Department wouldn't give them one because there was one post office down at Green's and there was another one at Seeliberg. And they said, you'll have to talk, you know, one of those into coming and relocating. Well, Seeliberg wouldn't do it because they'd lost everything to Lafarge. They didn't want to lose their post office. And so Mr. Green said, yeah, you can have it. The only thing is, if we move it up there, you got to keep the name. It's got to be Lafarge. And so that's how it got its name.
So it's completely random.
It is.
A young lady
Absolutely.
Pointed at something.
Yeah, a lot of people say, oh, it must have been the French background when the French traders were here. No, it isn't.
Well, great tidbit of knowledge there. So, and who, you know, I'm sure there were treaties with the indigenous folks, but the question is, who owned the land? Or if I wanted to come to Lafarge or the area to, was it homesteads? Was it owned by the railroad? Was it investors? Who would I buy the land from if I wanted?
You would have to buy it from the federal government.
Okay.
And actually, when they came, they would pick out the land. They'd figure out, it was surveyed in 1846.
Oh, wow.
So everything is laid out. So then you would find out what land you wanted. And then Thomas DeJane's a good example. They had to go down to Mineral Point, which imagine
First
back
couple,
then
yeah.
is walking or in a cart, you know, type of thing. And there was a land office in Mineral Point. And then they would go and they'd say, we'd like to buy some land up in the Kickapoo Valley. And generally it was $1.25 an acre, which was, you know, basic,
right.
As cheap as you could buy land. And so then you would buy the 80 or the 160 or whatever and acres, and you'd have it.
And the federal government would finance you, or you had to get
No, you had to pay.
Okay.
Yeah, you had to pay. They didn't put it on a plan, so.
Okay.
You'd have to have the money. So generally, like, when you, the Janes, when they came, they had money. Seeley, when he came, he had money. Dred Bean, who was another early founder of the Corners and Lafarge, he started a blacksmith shop and became quite wealthy, and so he had money, and he bought land and then borrowed money from his folks to buy some more land, and away
so
they went.
On. Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Thanks, Brad. You are listening to WDRT. Our station is here in Viroqua, Wisconsin, WDRT 91.9 FM. You're listening to the show Conversations. Today we're talking to Brad Steimetz, Lafarge historian, and we're talking about the history of Lafarge. And it's my hope that we can continue and find about the history of other small towns in the Vernon County area. So if you know of anyone that is a history buff or has knowledge of, you know, DeSoto or Reedstown or Hillsboro or something like that, please feel free to reach out to us at the station here. Our phone number here is 608-638-9378, or you can look us up online, wdrt.org. As I mentioned, you're listening to the show Conversations. You're listening to it on Thursday morning, but you can also stream it on wdrt.org. Go to archives, look for the show Conversations, and you can listen to this show or many others from our rotating guests that do different interviews with all kinds of people about all kinds of topics. So back to Brad and talking about the village or city of Lafarge. So is Lafarge a village or a city, and how does that...
It's a village.
It's a village.
It's a village, and the thing that really set Lafarge off as a community was the coming of the railroad. And the railroad came to Lafarge in October of 1897. You know, they had to build a tunnel through the hill at the Lawton Farm, and they got that done and got the line up to Lafarge. And so by 1898, they were running regular trains in and out of Lafarge. And that just created a boom in the community, because the railroad ended, the Kickapoo Railroad ended at Lafarge. It started down in the Wazeek area on the Wisconsin River and went all the way up the valley. And there was a place now, instead of having to raft those lumber rafts down the Kickapoo, you could put them on cars and haul them away as on those freight cars. And so there was just a boom during the time from 1900, in which Lafarge just took off. And all kinds of buildings were constructed at that time. Main Street just filled up with stores of all kind. And it's interesting that you mentioned about how do you become a village? Well, you have to incorporate. And in 1899, they decided they were going to incorporate as a village. We just celebrated our 125th anniversary. We did that at the 4th of July this year as a village. And they had to figure out, you know, what was going to be the boundaries and all that kind of thing. And they incorporated Seeleyburg into this new village of Lafarge. And they basically, they were going to use the Kickapoo River as the west boundary, but then a couple of the farmers said, no, we want to be included too. So they went a couple of farms to the west of that. And then they used the Kickapoo as the southern boundary, the Bear Creek as the southern boundary. And then there were a couple of farms. Hayes and Bailey had farms to the east, and so they included those and voted on it, and 1899 they became a village.
Okay, so 1899 was the official launch of it there.
Yeah.
What about, taking it back just a little bit, what about the Civil War time? Any special events or happenings from the area?
Well, there was, the it's interesting that many of the people who were involved in the Civil War, and that was such a transitionary time in American history, but many people, like my great-grandfather, Philip Steinmetz, who was wounded at Fredericksburg in that battle in the Civil War, but many of those people decided to come west. And so you see a lot of Civil War veterans who came to Wisconsin because it was cheap land, it was available land, you could get your farming started, and it's interesting, my great-grandfather came and started a farm up on Morningstar Ridge toward east of Lafarge, between Lafarge and Hillsboro. And his brother came also and started a farm, and two of his brother-in-laws, actually the Krauses, came, and they started farms too, and they loved it, and they stayed, and so you see a lot of that. And occasionally there were people actually in the Kickapoo Valley at that time. The Lawtons would be a good example, because the man who had the Lawton farm at that time went away and was wounded quite severely in the war, and he came back, and he was not only wounded, but then he got the war flu, or whatever they called it at that time. And when he came back, it looked like he was might perish. And it was interesting that the Native Americans were good friends with them, and they sat down and they started using their poultices and medicines on him, and got him straightened around, and he lived another 30, 40 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. So there are few, if you look at the Civil War veterans of say, Vernon County, and there's a brand new book that Jan Young from Viola has just written on that, available if you contact her in Viola. And it gives a lot of those veterans some 500 different names. Most of them were from the eastern United States, so on. Mm-hmm. But a few were actually in the Vernon County area. Dredsel Bean would be a good example of that, because the Bean family owned a farm up on North Bear Creek, and he was a teenager and went away to fight in the war. He was ended up in a cavalry unit and became a blacksmith. He shoed horses. And when he came back from the war, he went to Dempster Seeley and he said, "I'd like to start a blacksmith shop." And Seeley said, "Oh, that'd be a great idea. We need it for our operation here." And he told him, "Go down to the corners and set up there, because you'd have area farmers, you know, from Otter Creek and Bear Creek would be coming in, and those on the ridges and everything, and they need that." And so he started up that business, and away they went.
Wow. And all these names that you're saying, Lawton is now the Lawton Library.
Yes.
In Lafarge.
Yes, that's the family.
Bean is Bean Park.
Yeah, the Lawton Library is located in where the Dred Bean's home was.
Yep. Right, yep. Right. And Seeley, you know,
Seeleyburg. Yeah.
Kickapoo Stump Jumper. Wasn't there a turntable, or what do they call it?
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right there as well. So interesting. And then the other one, a number of months ago, I got to talk to Kevin Alderson and some folks from the Cheyenne Valley Association. So that would really kind of bump. And why don't you give us a little bit of a background quickly on the Cheyenne Valley? And did that bump up against the Lafarge area, or?
Well, not exactly. Okay. That's over between Ontario and Hillsboro.
Okay.
But the fact is that the people of Cheyenne Valley ended up, marrying and becoming part of the surrounding communities, and some of those people came to Lafarge and right. lived. It's interesting. I wrote a series of articles on the KKK in Lafarge in Vernon County, and I just republished it a little bit ago.
Okay.
And man, the feedback I got on that was amazing. But one of the things that came about from that was the fact that the KKK did some atrocious things, burning crosses on graves and things like that. and basically got run out of Lafarge. And part of that had to do with one of the barbers in the village was black, and you know, a prominent member of, came from the Cheyenne Valley, and a prominent member of the community, you know, and they were trying to run him out of town, and the town said, no, no, we're going to run the Klan out of town.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of that. So yeah, there's different families that married, and I can remember my aunt Alice and her husband Mike lived over in Cheyenne Valley, and I used to go over there and hang out for a week during the summertime when I was a kid. And one day I walked, we went over there, and I walked in the front door, and here are two little African-American kids running around in the kitchen. And I'm going, hey, what's going on here? Well, the Revels family lived right across the road from them. And the mother was having some difficulty with childbirth, and they had to take her to the hospital in Hillsboro. And so the two little ones, Alice said, yeah, we'll take care of them. And so, right. I mean, that connection between those communities was
strong.
Yes, yeah, it really was. Yeah.
And for those that don't, that may not have caught the information or the show on the Cheyenne Valley, Cheyenne Valley was a black settlement, or not exclusively black settlement, but post-Civil War freed or escaped slaves farmed and lived in that area.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's a fascinating thing to look up and follow up and get more information on as well. So we talked quickly before about the train that went from Lafarge to Waseca, and that was basically hauling lumber.
Yes.
And things to get down to the Wisconsin River so they could then reload and get it down.
Well,
the river,
yeah, and they would transfer the cars to other trains, that which would then head off to wherever. You know, it was going Madison,
sure.
Chicago,
okay.
You know, wherever type of thing. And there, at its height, there was two trains a day that were coming up and down the track. One would be a passenger train with the mail, generally, and then it would also probably have some freight cars on it. And then the second train would be strictly a freight train,
okay.
Hauling materials back and forth. And of course, in Lafarge, all of the stores were getting their things that they sold brought in on that train. And then they were turning around and sending out farm goods, of course, lumber and all those kinds of things. And so it was a very, very busy time. And they that train really did make Lafarge, because it became a very, very active trading center, and the community just blew up at that time.
Sure, sure. Well, let's click over to the early 1900s. So I'm assuming that, like most of Wisconsin, dairying was popular turn of the century. Were there cheese factories in the area? What were the common crops and things like that of the early 1900s?
Yes, it's interesting if you look at the bringing the dairy industry out into the state and go back to that Lawton farm, because the Lawtons actually were the first to actually have cattle from the UW dairy operation that were brought out and bred, and their herd was this, you know, top of the line kind of thing, and then they bred cows and sold them to their neighbors and all of that kind of thing. So you not only had dairy operations, but you had kind of like top of the line, generally Holstein operations that were around. And by the early 1900s, then the farms in the area were transitioning to dairying operations, because it was easy on even a 40-acre farm to have a dozen or 15 cattle that you're milking. And you can make it. You can make enough money to get, you know, to cover everything. And so there was all kinds. And by the very nature of the hills and valleys of the Kickapoo Valley, sometimes it's hard to get enough land to, you know, to pasture all those cattle. So the smaller dairy farms were very common. And again, they grew up all around Lafarge, and so Lafarge was the place where those farmers went for their supplies and went and took and sold their goods and to be hauled out on that railroad and that whole type of thing. So, sure. And it was very common. And when I was growing up in the early 1950s, Wednesday night and Saturday night was when everybody came to town. And I can remember I had cousins that lived up on Jug Creek who I never really saw. They had a dairy farm up there, and there was a country school up there, and so I really didn't see them except on Wednesday and Saturday nights. They'd come to town, and then we'd get these games of horse and Indians, cowboys and Indians, and fight Civil War battles and all of that kind of stuff in the alleys, and just have a great time. And but you know, for my folks who ran a grocery store in the early 1950s, they virtually would have to stay open until midnight on Saturdays in particular to get everybody served. So it was really a big deal, and everybody came to town.
Well, and I suppose they had milked your cows first before you came into
town.
Yes,
you did. So. Absolutely.
And I also, Teddy Olson told me stories, and Roger Andrews told me stories. Those were two local gentlemen that I used to drive school bus with a long time ago. But they would tell stories about, they used to show movies on the side of the bank.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting. One of my great sources for history was Maxine Sherrod, who was Maxine Marshall before she married Jim Sherrod. But she told me about that originally the movie started right on Main Street, and they showed them in the intersection where 82 and 131 meet, right by the hardware store. But when the state made those state highways, then you couldn't do that anymore. So then they moved the operation to the street next to the bank, and then showed them off the side of the bank. Well, they had a big screen, so they showed them there. And I actually can remember the theater in Lafarge was built in 1947, but they still were showing a film or two outside when I was growing up there in the early 1950s. They would be special kind of movies out there, but when they built the theater, that all stopped.
Right.
Yeah.
What else was going on downtown? What were the hot spots?
You have to understand that, like, when my folks had the grocery store in Lafarge at that time, there were four grocery stores. And there were, the hardware store on the corner, today Kickapoo Mercantile and Hardware, was the oldest store on Main Street. And it was basically either a mercantile or a hardware store almost all of its existence. So you had those that were going. And the Mars Theater was built in 1947. And that was a very popular spot. And of course, Saturday nights, when the families would all come to Lafarge, they would show a kids movie to start with. And so the kids would go to the movies, and the parents would visit and meet their friends and buy their groceries and get that all done. And there were a couple of bars on Main Street, and those were popular. And so there was lots of, and I mean, when my dad was in the garage, that was always, there were two garages. Clark Brothers ran a garage where the new truck stop actually is now. And they sold Dodges and Chryslers there. And so you had, those were always open, and lots of businesses, and Newsom's and Cheese Factory were down there. And you talked about cheese factories. The rural cheese factories were all around Lafarge. And then they would make their cheese, and they would bring that to Lafarge, and it would be stored in the cheese warehouse. That building actually still sits right very old and falling in, but it sits right next to Newsom's down there by the river. And then the cheese would be put on ice there and cooled down and kept and then shipped out on the railroad. So all those country cheese factories could operate. Plus, there was a big cheese factory in Lafarge, which is where the current Organic Valley store is on Main Street now.
Sure, the main big white building,
yes,
right on the corner there.
Yes.
That was the original cheese factory.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, again, thanks, Brad, for sharing all this interesting information on Lafarge. You are listening to WDRT 91.9 FM. We're here in Viroqua. We're talking about Lafarge, Wisconsin, and the history of Lafarge with Brad Steimetz, who is a local author, retired educator from the area, and just a wealth of knowledge. So thanks for listening. Feel free to listen again in our archives, wdrt.org. Look for archives and then look for the show Conversations, and you can listen to it again or send it to your out-of-town friends that are just dying for more information about Lafarge, I'm sure. So back to it, because we're quickly burning through this hour, Brad, and I got a lot of questions yet. The other one that I had, and tell me if this story is true, but I had heard that what is now Phil and Deb's Downtown Tap used to have an additional story on top of it. So it was two stories, and they used to play basketball up there.
That is true.
And I was told, and I think this was another Teddy Olson story, that basketball is played in winter, so they needed to heat it upstairs. So they had a wood stove that was actually, the wood stove was big and was actually notched into halfway between the two baskets right on the court, so you had to play around the wood stove. Is that true?
I guess it is. That was all gone by the time I was around. But yes, they did play basketball up there. The gym at the school in Lafarge wasn't built until 1937, and so prior to that, all the activities really for the school, the plays and the commencements and all of those shows that they would put on and the concerts and everything like that were in what was known as the Opera House, which was that upstairs room that you're talking about above where Phil and Deb's bar is today. And I've heard those stories about that you did have to play, and that was pretty common in the Kickapoo Valley. There's a great story about they had in Gaze Mills, they had the stove in a corner of the court, and they had Gaze Mills had a special defense set up where they would basically force you to dribble into the stove, and you just didn't want to go over there. But yeah, I've heard those stories about the playing around the stove in that court in Lafarge too.
That's called home cooking, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely home cooking in those situations. Yes,
right. Well, Lafarge was always known for baseball as well. Well, they have a beautiful field out behind the high school right now. When was that built? And
that's a New Deal project. Okay. It was built in the late 1940s, and the 1930s. What actually happened was there was a great flood in 1935. In the Kickapoo River, and there was a ballpark south of Lafarge along the river where Bear Creek comes into the Kickapoo down there. It was a beautiful ballpark, and that's where Lafarge played, but that flood wiped that out. And so, there were still season games in the season to play that summer. And so they went up to the school grounds, and west of the school grounds, there was some open ground, and they started playing up there. And then shortly after that, they were able to get some WPA money from the federal government to start that ballpark, and spent a couple years getting it ready. And I think they, by the end of the, like 1939, they were ready to go. Didn't have any lights at that time. They didn't put the lights up until after World War II. The VFW was big in raising funds for that. And so that Calhoun Park is named that because the guy who was, Gene Calhoun, who was a great baseball player and a manager of the local teams, he was the one that really worked hard to get that built and get that going.
Sure, sure. Anything else on the sports side of the world there that that's memorable through the years?
Well, I could tell you all of the shots I made in basketball. That'd only take a few minutes, but no, I don't think we have to go.
Okay.
And I do find that when I post photos of teams on Facebook, boy, I get a lot of feedback about those teams and who they were. So I've been really trying to get those photos organized so that when I show them, I can know where to find them and that type of thing. So high school teams that were championships teams and that kind of thing. And as you say, baseball was always very big in Lafarge, almost from the beginning. And you know, there was even one team that took the title of the state champion of Wisconsin. I'm not sure it deserved it, but it took it anyway. And it played, it won all the playoff games that they were supposed to win. So I guess they could have it for that year.
We'll call it. We'll call it.
Yeah, right.
Champions.
Yes.
For sure. For sure. Okay. And then yesterday when I was just prepping up for the show, I Googled up the most famous person from Lafarge, Wisconsin. And you weren't it, Brad. Sorry. But it said that the most famous person from Lafarge, Wisconsin is Bernard B. Brown. Does that ring a bell at all?
Oh,
he
wow.
was a sound engineer.
He won the Oscar.
He won the Oscar.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a very interesting story because his grandfather was a noted photographer in Lafarge, and Charles Brown. And he had actually had his studio up in Seeleyburg and with all those floods, and he moved it down to Lafarge. And fantastic photographer. I've got a number of family photos that he took of the Steinmetz family and different ones. And then he went to California. And when he went to California in the early 1900s, 1910-ish about, he became the photographer of the Hollywood stars.
Oh, wow.
And so then his family continued to play in... or to work in that field. And Bernard Brown was the guy who virtually invented sound for movies. I mean, there were others that were working on it, but Bernard Brown was the one who got it coordinated to where you could run that reel and it would have the sound on it. So he was the one who did that. And he won an Academy Award. He won an Oscar for doing that. He was virtually the earliest pioneer in that field of mass producing sound movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's our brush with greatness.
There
from
it
Lafarge.
Is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
It is.
I never won an Oscar. So yeah.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
You're a young guy. You might come around yet. So
yeah.
The other thing that plays a big part of Lafarge history are all the floods. And what's the layman's view on that, or the quick view on the floods that happened over the years and the dam and that sort of thing that we have available here in the last 5 minutes?
Yes, it's when you have a river town like Lafarge, Seeleyburg before that. That river is going to impact your community, And of course, you know, you got all that story about the dam that was going to be built, which was a flood control dam, which was never built. And then you've had a series of floods, you know, recently, virtually 2018, the last great one. And it's just one thing after another. But amazingly, and I was just doing a history walk here back in on Labor Day weekend, and we were looking down at that part of town where the floods waters hit, and it's amazing how that has changed. I mean, Dollar General is there now, and there's a new car wash, and just all kinds of things. I mean, they had to be changed. They had to be elevated. The OV store was elevated, you know, and Newsom's unfortunately closed and has never reopened, badly damaged during that flood. But it's just a process. And after that flood, the village looked at possible building dikes to keep the water out and that type of thing. And that's still on the books, actually, for the village, and I don't know where that's going to go, but it's an ongoing process that's run through all of the village's history.
Right, right. And Brad, what do you see, being that you've lived in a small town for a lot of years and things like that, what makes it go? What's going to keep it alive and happening for another 100 years? What's the secret sauce in making a small town livable and inviting people to come and live there?
Well, one thing is entrepreneurial spirit. Businesses thrive in Lafarge. Actually, there are more businesses in Lafarge now than there were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It's kind of amazing. And we also have a community school. It's not a, you know, that was a deal back in the 60s. We did not want to consolidate, and so we have a community school, which has a very unique four school as part of it, which is going to make that even more attractive for people to come. And people are actually moving into town because of that four school. And we have Organic Valley, which is the world headquarters are located in Lafarge. And then we have that very, very unique Kickapoo Valley Reserve, mm-hmm. where the some of the most unique and beautiful land in the Driftless area is being preserved and enjoyed. And right. again, people like to be around it.
Right.
So hopefully they can keep coming, and maybe the railroad will come back. No, they won't.
Amtrak. Yeah, there's a lot of great small business startups and things like that in Lafarge. There's some space available yet on Main Street if anybody's looking. There's a couple restaurants, a couple taverns in town, gas stations, like you said, retail stores, grocery stores, that sort of thing. And I know, Brad, that you do a history walk as well, and you have one coming up real shortly, don't you?
Yes, this Saturday on October 19th, we will be having a history walk. We'll meet in front of the Lawton Library at 1:30, and we're going on a different route than we've gone in the past couple of walks. And if the weather happens to be bad, we'll just go in the library and talk history in there, but... So come join us, and we'll go for a little history walk on Saturday.
That's this coming Saturday.
Yes.
And everybody's invited. And about how long does it take?
It's usually an hour and a half.
Right. Okay. Well, great. Well, we sure want to thank Brad Steinmetz for joining us today in the first of what I hope will be many information shares on small villages and towns here in Vernon County. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM. Thanks for listening, and hope to be talking with you again soon. Take care.